It's really wonderful to be here. I was trying to think when the last time that I was here, and I don't remember, but I remember some of the first times that I was here. It would have been when Barbara and Beth and Craig were in the pastoral team together, and I met with them on a regular basis, and I got here, and I always have appreciated the times that I've been able to be at Perkasie. Thank you for the invitation to come this morning. When we returned from Venezuela in the late 80s, I developed a fascination for Garrison Keillor, Prairie Home Companion. And I loved the way that he would weave the stories of Lake Wobegon together and in the process have some substance there as well. And FYI, if you like Garrison Keillor, he will be at the Sellersville Theater in July of this summer. Maybe I'll get a take on their sales if any of you know. I'm only kidding. I discovered over the years that storytelling is not something simply for entertainment, but it's a means to integrate an important message with real life. And so this morning, the sermon is going to be a story in story form. It's about the scripture text that we just heard. The stories are real life situations, but the characters are fictitious, ordinary people like you and I. On a Friday in Lent, a card arrived in the mail that caught Pastor Lloyd Wiebe's attention. "God never places more on us than we can handle," the card read. And Lloyd taped it above his desk in his office. 10 days earlier, Howard Stelzfus, Lloyd's best friend, his neighbor, and his parishioner, had died. Howard and his wife Elsie had retired from farming about the same time the Wiebes arrived in Napanee, Indiana. The Wiebe children quickly had adopted the Stelzfuses, calling them Gramps and Grams. Lloyd and his wife Fran had struck up a friendship with the Stelzfus' only daughter, Iris, and her husband, Don. The funeral service was held on a Thursday. It was simple. Several of Howard's favorite songs were sung. Three of his favorite biblical passages were read, passages that he had selected years before. And there was a sermon, a prayer that was written by his daughter Iris, and then a quartet sang, "Precious Lord, Take My Hand." Elsie sat passively through the entire service, displaying no emotion at all over the death of her husband of 43 years. After the benediction, the pallbearers began to wheel the casket down the center aisle of the church, and Iris followed with her mother, holding her arm as they walked behind the casket. And suddenly, Elsie collapsed. Someone screamed. A nurse in the audience pushed her way to Elsie's side. The congregation was frightened. Lloyd sprinted to his office and called 911. People stood in stunned silence as the EMS squad rushed into the church, carefully picked up Elsie, laid her on the gurney, and wheeled her to the waiting ambulance. People followed that gurney outside, and they watched as the ambulance, with its siren wailing, sped to its destination, a hospital 4 or 5 blocks away. It seemed but only a few minutes until a phone call from the hospital confirmed what everyone feared. Elsie had died instantly. Lloyd had followed the ambulance to the hospital, and he then came back to the church where a handful of people were in the basement eating potato salad and sandwiches. Unable to talk, he went to his office. He sat and he stared at the walls. Later on in the day, he found himself at the Iverson home with Don and Iris. As he sat there in vain, trying to think of something to say, a word of comfort, a word of hope, but everything he thought of seemed trivial. He didn't invite the family to pray because he feared that he would be speechless. Finally, he broke the silence and he said to Iris, "When are you thinking of having your mother's funeral?" "As soon as possible, if that's okay with you. Saturday even," Iris said. "Everyone who's coming is already here in town." The Saturday service was by far the most difficult funeral service that Lloyd had ever conducted. When he stepped to the podium to speak, he sensed that the congregation was hanging on his every word. People were hoping the pastor would help them make sense of the tragic situation that had occurred. Lloyd, however, felt hollow. He was certain that his words sounded empty. On Monday, his normal day off, Lloyd made visits that he had neglected the previous week because of the funerals. First, he stopped at the retirement center, the Ebenezer home. And normally, Lloyd enjoyed joking with the aides, and he would usually play euchre with several of the men and pray with some other residents. But on this day, he found Ebenezer depressing. It was worse when he visited the hospital. He nearly choked when he walked down the corridor. What was that smell? One of his patients that he visited regularly was a young boy who had leukemia. Lloyd greeted his mother, spoke briefly with the boy, and said a prayer before he left. And as he walked out of the hospital, Lloyd felt like robo-pastor. It had not been a very engaging visit. That night, after dinner was finished and the children had left the table, Lloyd's wife, Fran, said to him, "What's wrong?" "I'm sick of Indiana winters, I'm sick of Lent, and I'm tired of my job," Lloyd said, "and I'm ready for Easter." 15 minutes later, the phone rang. It was Willis Crabill, a retired pastor who reminded Lloyd of a Marine sergeant. Willis usually omitted greetings and salutations. "Lloyd, you normally study Sunday's text on Tuesday morning. Do you plan to do so tomorrow?" Lloyd hadn't even thought about it. "I guess so," he muttered. "Then I'll be at your office at 9 a.m. We'll read and we'll study together." And before he could respond, Willis hung up. Lloyd was not sure he wanted anyone in his office in the morning. But there was no denying Willis, one of the most persistent men that Lloyd had ever met. When Lloyd arrived at the office the next morning, Willis was already in the kitchen brewing a pot of coffee. The two pastors were just about to begin when suddenly Iris walked in unexpectedly. Lloyd started to tell his friend Willis that they would have to postpone their study when the older pastor spoke and said, "Iris, we're just about to study the gospel for next Sunday, the fifth Sunday at Lent. Would you like to join us?" Lloyd was surprised when Iris eagerly accepted the invitation and sat down. Willis offered a prayer, and then he asked Iris to read the story of Jesus and Lazarus. Iris had read only a few verses when Lloyd began to feel ill. The longer that Iris read, the worse Lloyd felt. By the time the reading was completed, he told his companions that he was unable to continue. "Do you have the flu?" Iris asked kindly. "I don't know what it is," Lloyd confessed. "I've had something for several days." "What strikes you about the story?" Willis asked, ignoring the state of Lloyd's health. A flash of irritation swept over Lloyd. He felt like saying, "Willis, will you listen? I don't feel well." But instead, he answered the question. It isn't the most significant thing in the story, but I'm struck by the first words of both sisters. Jesus walks miles to get to their place, and immediately they try and lay a guilt trip on him. If you would have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. I hear things like that a lot, Lloyd said. It isn't a very cheerful story, is it? Iris said. Lloyd agreed. A man gets ill. Jesus, for some strange reason, takes his time leaving. The man dies. The disciples are afraid that they're going to get killed. Martha comes once he arrives and criticizes him, and it ends with the high priest plotting his death. It's enough to make you sick. Willis nodded and said, and it did. I don't think the way I feel has anything to do with the story, Lloyd protested. And then Willis leaned forward and said gently, how do you evaluate your part in the two Stolzfus deaths, funerals? And tears immediately filled Lloyd's eyes. On a scale of 1 to 10, I was a -2. I'm afraid I wasn't a very good pastor. I was too shocked to be of much help to Iris and Don on Thursday, and I was almost disoriented at Elsie's funeral on Saturday. I'd say it was pretty pitiful. He turned to Iris, and he said, I'm sorry I was of so little help. Iris looked surprised. I didn't see it that way at all. Don and I weren't looking for any great words of wisdom the night Mom died. We were just glad you were there. You reacted like Jesus did when he saw the grief of Mary and Martha. He wept. I'm very grateful that you have been with us during these difficult days. The reason I came by this morning was to thank you. You helped me understand that I was not the only one who had experienced grief. I lost my parents, but you lost dear friends. Everything you did told me that you loved them dearly, and that was important to Don and I. I couldn't even pray with you, Lloyd said, choking back his tears. I found the entire visit a prayer. It was enough just to have you with us. I told Don this morning that I have felt the presence of God more powerfully in the last week than I have at any time in my life. He said something that baffled me at first. He said, faith sees best in the dark. The more I think about it, the more I like that. What does it say to you? Willis broke in and he said, well, the first thing it says to me is that your husband is a very perceptive person and a fine theologian. More people lose faith in good times than in bad times. Bright lights make us think that we can find our own way. But in the darkness, we know we need the light. Iris picked up the Bible. Mind if I respond to Willis's question? I'm struck by the presence of death everywhere in this story. Perhaps it's because I've been thinking about death a lot lately, but I can even smell it. Martha says, Lord, already there's a stench because he's been dead 4 days. It just seems to me that the odor is everywhere. Every day, there's a story in the newspaper about a child or a teen or a young adult or a senior citizen who dies in a tragic way. Some die of COVID-19. Others are killed in accidents. Others by violent means, while others inject death into their bodies via drugs or alcohol. And the money we so desperately need for life, for the care of the very young and the very old, the very poor, for health care, that money is invested in weapons of death. The stench of death is everywhere. Willis said to her, "Do you see any hope?" Iris nodded. "I am the resurrection and the life. That is the hope. The hope isn't in humans. It's in God. God can bring life in the midst of death. God weeps over the death of his creation, just as Jesus wept, just as David wept. Of course, there is one important distinction. God is not willing to let death have the final word. Mom and Dad are now in the hands of God, and that is a very great comfort to Don and I." It was Willis's turn. "The world uses death as a tool. Like the high priest says, it's a matter of expediency. He figures that it's no big deal that one person dies so that the rest of the nation need not suffer. Governments are willing to lose a few for the sake of a military action, and they use death as a threat. Just ask the Kurds, or the Afghanis, or the Ukrainians. God uses death too, but not as a threat. He uses the death of Jesus to give life. He uses his own death in order to give hope and to gather together into one the dispersed children of God." Lloyd had listened intently to the exchange between his two friends. "Iris is right," he said. "Death is all around us. I started to feel nauseated when Elsie died. And since that time, I've smelled death wherever I went. When Iris read that story, it became overpowering. By the way, I'm feeling better now." Tears again filled Lloyd's eyes. "I'm afraid I've had a few things backwards. I have tried to be the resurrection and the life. It was not enough to tell of the one who is the resurrection. I had to have answers. I had to be strong. And when I had no answers and I had no strength, I felt like people were blaming me, just as Martha blamed Jesus. But Don and Iris don't need me to be their comfort. The one who is the resurrection and the life is comfort enough." Willis nodded, smiled, and he said, "Even pastors need to hear God's good news sometimes. Let me offer one more image from this story. I'm struck by Lazarus coming forth from the grave with the burial cloths wrapped around him. He's just been resurrected, but the signs of death were still evident. I see this as a parable of our time. We live by the grace and the power of God, but death is still very much present. We live as Easter people in a Good Friday world. Jesus is the resurrection and the life, but we still live in a world of pain. Sickness, disease, anger, hatred, war. And these are but a few of the burial cloths wrapped around us." Willis let his words sink in, and then he concluded, "Jesus issues a command, unbind him and let him go. We all need to be unbound. Lloyd needed God to unbind him from his need to play God, because that is certainly death. Others need to be unbound from hatred or envy or greed. And the more deeply we enter into Jesus' life, the more deeply we need to experience resurrection." They finished their study at about 10:30. At 12:45, Lloyd came home for lunch. Fran asked, "What did you do this morning?" Lloyd laughed. "I got sick, and I got better. Seriously, after our study, I went to the hospital to visit the little boy with leukemia, and then I made a visit at Ebenezer Community Home. I thought you made those visits yesterday, Fran asked. No, that was RoboPastor. Today I visited with a few bandages unwrapped. It's amazing what you see when you become unbound. It was wonderful. And you know what? It even smelled different today. Will you join me in prayer? Gracious God, in a world that experiences way too much grief, we find ourselves at times dealing with grief. You are the resurrection and the life, and yet we find ourselves often bound by clothes that restrict us, that prevent us from experiencing your new life. By the presence of your Spirit, may we recognize that which binds us. By your renewing Spirit, may we have the courage to recognize and name those garments and take them off. And may we also be your vessels to help others when the task of unbinding is needed. In this Good Friday world, enable us to give testimony to your resurrection and life. Amen.